So we will we'll record it, and then it'll just be shared with people who couldn't attend. So I'm Andy Yates. I'm one of the directors and co-owners of CoStratify, and I've got my colleague Andy Shuttleworth on the line as well. So what this is all about is, so we had a long chat to Ben, to Charles at Gravitas, and we talked about some of the interesting things that are going to present themselves, life after lockdown, and what we've learned. And we'll talk a little bit about the context of where we've been working, what we've been doing. But what we want this to be is as interactive as possible. We want this to be also a forum where you have experiences where you can share. You know, we don't know everything here. We're not claiming to know everything, but this is just a set of experiences and kind of a set of contemplation around what happens beyond where we are today. And we thought it was timely to kind of do this. So I hope everybody can see my screen. So into the second slide. So we're CoStratify. We were formed as a new company in 2019, but we're formed from two companies that came together trading since 2015 and 2018, respectively. We have a lot of experience around local authorities, health, housing, charities, and hopefully... a number of you are from those sectors, and it will find it relevant for the conversation we're going to have today. We have a very a context of using specialists, so we bring in lots of associates and lots of people who work with us, and they're usually specialist consultants or specialist expertise around certain areas of technology or certain areas of consultancy. We're based in the northwest of England, but we work across the UK. And our kind of, you know, CoStratify as a company, we were set up and we set ourselves up to, you know, our ethos is essentially forming strong evidence for change. We're an independent consultancy, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, but we don't do implementations. We guide people and we help people, and we're not critical. We're very much an organization that reflects on where people are and tries to give them a journey. And so I'll hand over to Andy just to have a short introduction, and then I'll come back and we'll go into a bit more detail.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. So I'm Andy Shuttleworth. I'm co-owner and director of CoStratify. So I've spent the last 8 years, I guess, delivering and leading consultancy engagements, significant portion of that working with clients to form public cloud business cases, working a lot with public clouds. That's been the flavor of the year over the last kind of 4 or 5 years. Working across public, private sector, most recently finance, housing, charity, health and government sectors, both regional and local. Before that, technical pre-sales with blue chip organizations. So just echoing what Andy said, really, thanks for your time today. Thanks for joining. I've seen the slides, obviously. Andy's got some great insights into the clients he's been directly working with over the last kind of 3 or 4 months. Enjoy the session, and I'll be around throughout to help answer some questions.
Thanks, Andy. So a little bit of context about myself. So I'm from a mixture of backgrounds of public sector, council, commercial world, but also kind of working at a CTO type level and reporting through to CEOs, COOs. And I did a lot of work in like Lancashire County Council, for example, was one of my places where I worked for a fair amount of time. One of the most frustrating things that I kind of got in that role, and we'll come through on that, is around understanding of IT. And a number of times people came to me and kind of would say, oh, you know, I've got a great idea, and we talk about it's been a great idea, and we go, well, okay, what does it cost today, or what are the challenges today, or what are the issues today? And it was very hard for people to articulate that. So what we tried to do in our engagements, and this is where I'll go into a little bit, is our working experiences over the past 2 months have really been very interesting, because normally we would just do that on an engagement to understand how ready an organization is to change and what their kind of issues are and risks and issues. And whenever critical, we're always very reflective. And, you know, my adage that I always say is the decision you make at the time you make it is always the best decision. And a lot of organizations are living with decisions that they've made, and they were the right decisions at the time. But we have a unique position. We act independently to guide and assist clients. We don't do implementation, so we don't have a vested interest. So that's kind of just gives you a bit of a backdrop. We'll recommend certain things or suggest you to look at things, but we don't do implementation. So we don't kind of roll into that kind of implementation work. Through the COVID-19 crisis, we've kind of continued to work with four housing associations and one council. And those housing associations vary in levels of where we were doing readiness reviews compared to where we were actually in one leading the organisation through essentially the steps to in lockdown and what they had to do and take forward through the COVID crisis. So our observations, and these are ours, it's not extensive, but this is our observations, and we're hopeful that they'll find them useful. So what we saw, and this was just so evident, is that we found and saw demonstrable and strong resilience in terms of the organization. Extreme innovation and very much a can-do attitude came through. We saw individuals and organizations where they would potentially, and there's comments that we had, at the end of some of the work we did, where they would say, oh, it would have taken us months and months to do this. The steps we would have had to go through, it would have just been too hard to do. So there was a little bit of throwing away the rule book, and people became very adaptable, very flexible. They understood that the reality on the ground was they had to act fast. Okay. And that, for the sector that we're talking and you guys are from, can sometimes be a challenge. There's always a reason sometimes why things have to go through a certain loop. Now, I'm not saying either way, but all I'm saying is there was some results delivered out of this, and there will be some corrective action that will have to happen beyond this. So, people who rolled out Teams in a week potentially might not have got all the security policies right, for example. So there will be some corrective action. That's one of the things we talk about later. But there was a very much a focused attitude, a very much a teaming attitude, a collaborative, a challenging attitude, I would say, around the status quo and around, well, what can we do differently? But what we also saw, the organisations that were successful, and I was also involved in some cases where we were involved with getting information from other housing associations or other councils. And what we saw was the councils or the housing associations and charities that were really successful in kind of mobilizing their workforce to be COVID ready and to come out of it were the ones who actually retained structure and also retained performance and metrics. And some of those places did not have those performance and metrics measures in place when going into COVID, so they wouldn't have dashboards. Now, we're not talking about dashboards that were auto-generating. These are dashboards that people were collecting information manually and reporting on a daily basis. Some people got into dynamic reporting using technologies like Power BI and things like that. But at the end of the day, this was about getting the information, for example, how many tenants had bit self-diagnosed, how many were isolating, how many were in the vulnerable category, how many people did they need to make vulnerable calls to, how many of their staff were shielding, how many fell into certain age categories. So all of this information were absolutely crucial. I saw in places it was really difficult to get that information, and people went over and above and really worked hard to get that information and going manually and making telephone calls. But the ones we saw really succeeded, that were the ones with the structured, performance metric driven and dynamic, in very dynamic in their reporting. And what we've seen from that is that actually they've gone, well, actually, this is a really good way of working. And if we've got a finger on the pulse of our organization, we need to start taking some of the goodness out of this. So what we saw, I kind of would summarize it as there's lots of traits of collaborative behavior and it was always there. But there was no reason not to collaborate. And that's what was the real strongest sense of performance that came out of all the conversations we had. So in a crisis, why is focus achieved? And this is something I've been tossing around for a while. Why do people behave differently in a crisis compared to you know, in whether that's even outside of COVID, I've been involved in major incident panels and things like that. And people focus when something's going off the rails. So in a crisis, we typically are collectively less risk averse. And, you know, this was very, very evident of we've got to do this because people may die. We've got to do this because people may not get a service. They might not get food. We need to collaborate with others to flag out that there are, there's food requirements to a wider combined authority type model. We accept, and I talked about it earlier, we accept is it okay to throw away the rule, but that's not saying, you know, get the mavericks of this world and cause mayhem. This is about throwing away the rule book in a controlled way that allows you to be more flexible. And to be honest, some of those rules, maybe, you know, you may look to adapt in the future. I think this was one of the things that kind of all came through, was this having an all in it together attitude and a common purpose. And if you could ever create a program of work where everybody was driving in the same direction in the same way COVID achieved, that would be, you know, you look at sometimes at why projects fail and programs of work fail. This really is the underpinning attitude that everybody was, well, we've got to do this. It's a common purpose. And interestingly, we've all been on projects and programs where, you know, you say, oh, we need the repairs team to be involved with a piece of work because we're going to talk about the process for a new piece of software. And they kind of, oh, yeah, we're really busy. We'll come to you 4 weeks on Wednesday. The reality was those people didn't have their day job to do and they didn't get distracted. This was the focus and was the only priority. And what it showed to us is that actually, if you look at all the reasons why projects fail, projects typically fail because people are not committed. And this, what we saw here was people were committed. It wasn't unacceptable to give them an action that they would turn around in less than 12 hours. And because they realized the urgency of it. And these are all things that I think as a culture, people embraced. And I'd love to see this kind of culture continuing to some of the programs and planning that goes into some of the programs of change that we see happening. So I think the way to describe this is crisis does equal focus. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, we've seen it. I'm sure you'll have seen it in some of your areas that you work in. So when we're focused, why do we deliver? I think is the, you know, why do we all go in the same direction? Why are all the arrows, why are all the planes there going in the same direction? Well, what we also noticed that people were more committed to make personal sacrifices. So they wanted to achieve success because they realized there was something in it for them and that actually they felt good by doing it. And if we can construct programs of work that absolutely the right people are doing the right things at the right time in the right way, I'm sure we can really achieve that as well. This probably was the most challenging, the most interesting thing that we saw is that we asked more challenging questions, the why and the how. You know, somebody would say, well, it's going to take 5 weeks to get that, or 5 days to get that information. And there'll be people actively saying, well, why is it going to take 5 days? How can we get it faster? And that was a real, once that started to happen and started happening in a collaborative way, small subgroups started to form. And, you know, even doing this remotely all over Teams and or Zoom, it was really quite, it was quite refreshing to see it that people would say, oh, let's just form a subgroup or let's chat over this over a coffee in tomorrow morning to see how we can achieve it. And they'd all join and have a little coffee morning. And those were things that, you know, that we put in place to regularly try to move things along. And people were willing to smash through those poor processes. The ones they'd really lived with for years that just they couldn't be bothered going to fix. And we, you know, it's been around for a long time, but, you know, we've always done it that way. People were prepared to remove that phrase. And because of that freeing up of staff, And this was the balance between what we saw with organizations who furloughed everybody and then who didn't furlough everybody, but took a more well, actually, how can we use these people in a positive way? Even though they might not be doing their normal day job, they've got something to contribute. We saw those staff that were made more available, they were actually quite productive and were willing to consider improvements. And coming out of furlough, that's also an interesting place as well, is that if there is the availability of people to make change, then I think it's really, really good, a really good positive thing. So, there we go. So in this world, we saw these three elements of essentially a bit of a weird shaped equation, but crisis equals focus equals delivery. And those three things were underpinning everything that we've seen so far in terms of the behaviors. And if you take those together, taking this forward out of lockdown, I think there are three things that you probably could still take into any program of work and understand how you would get a success out of it. So the response, though, you know, some people would say, well, that's obvious, isn't it? And the response isn't surprising, because the sector, which a number of you are in here, are always willing to step up. You respond based on people doing the right thing. So what are the key lessons learned out of this? So I think nobody knew, and also now knows, how long this is going to be for. So our remit and our mantra to everybody was get comfortable. And this can be getting comfortable in so many different ways, from don't ignore the fact that, you know, if people need a DSE type chair at home or a keyboard, facilitate that to happen, to get them comfortable to be in a better place. Plan for the long term, but also plan for next time. Because one thing that we strongly believe is that there will be other situations like this, hopefully not as bad as we're in at the moment, but plan for that next time. So have a process that of being able to, you know, your business continuity plan that enacts these kind of different process and different ways of ordering equipment, getting equipment delivered, etc. Structure and governance is key. Absolutely. Don't lose structure and governance. Be able to have meetings, calls. And the way we planned it in one client was we literally had, you know, there'd be a 9 o'clock call, and then there'd be a 10 o'clock kind of reporting call, and then there'd be a 1 o'clock heads of service call, and then a 3 o'clock exec team, and a 5 o'clock sharing, you know, post 5 o'clock after the government announcements. And the government calls was then sharing anything that needed to be updated to take into the next day. Now, clearly, we've relaxed that a little bit now, and we're now more into, you know, probably three times a week that happening rather than daily. But structure and governance is key. One of the things that we said right at the very start of this, and it's like in any program of work, you have to log the risks and issues, and you have to log the decisions. At the end of this, people will come back and say, well, why did you decide to furlough these people? Why did you only decide to do repairs in that way? Why did you stop doing this? And people will want to have those answers. And it's very easy in the heat of all this happening to forget it. So one of the things we said was issue login, risk login, and decision logs, and making the log of those decisions and why you made those decisions. Back to the, you know, the best decision is the one you made at the time you made it. It's really important. One of the things that we also said was that you had to look at the bigger picture, and that was now and after COVID. So what does it mean? What are the what ifs? So what if suddenly we revert back into a lockdown situation? What if, you know, some of the staff that are being made available to a wider, say, general authority type model, where they're helping distribute food packs and things like that. What if that goes on for an extended period of time? So we also said is that I expect people will know these, but just to explain them. So Moscow, we used must, should, could, won't. So we analysed all the services and said, you know, and this is down to internal services. So in IT, for example, what must we do? We must be able to make sure people log in, but we probably won't going to be doing online training for them that's not relevant to remote working. But we could be doing slight improvements in terms of the user interfaces, for example, on certain applications that don't change fundamental core functionality. So the classic must, should, could, won't model we used across the board. And we also used, for any decision that we took into that, we did use the SWOT analysis, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities set. So what's the strength of making the decision? What weakness, what's the opportunity of it, et cetera? And what's the threat of what we're going to do? One of the things was looking out for all staff. It was really important. And I think that's something I would say, again, it's interesting now. And I had a really good conversation with somebody yesterday who said to me, Why do my family feel that it's actually normal to have a Sunday afternoon quiz every week? And kind of like, we never had that before. So actually, are we all going to carry on doing that? So people are actually saying, well, actually, that's not part of my normal. So actually, I'm not really going to accept that as being normal. So people are now starting to reflect on what is acceptable, what isn't acceptable in this new world. And that can be quite anxious for people even now. And it's so important to keep on top of those anxieties. One of the things we tried to do was describe the service. So anybody who's been involved in kind of service management type definitions, whether it's an IT service management or whether it's a wider service, if you're going to change your service, absolutely document. So if you haven't done that so far and you're offering a reduced service, even if it's just a one pager, document that service to say, this is what we do and this is what we don't do. And this is what we do now and this is what we're going to do in 3 months' time or a month's time. So think about the kind of relaxation and how you come out of lockdown, actually how that service thing goes back to normal, or it may not go back to normal. And having that and reviewing that on maybe even a monthly basis with your service definitions is really important, because then people are clear. You can reflect those services out onto your websites as well for tenants, for example, in housing. And a good example of that at the moment is that, you know, in recent days, most of you are involved in housing or have anything to do with housing will have seen that the government has issued a letter that said you should start all repairs. Now, a lot of organizations are going, well, maybe I'm not ready for that. So it's how you respond to that and how you adapt the service. So I think the way to summarize this and, you know, is having your finger on that pulse with the metrics is absolutely vital. If you haven't had that previously, try and have that. It can be from a dashboard. It can be from a very simple pivot table, but just a view that says, what are our metrics? What's our position of the organization? What's the health of the organization? But one thing is going to be critical, and that is for every organization that we deal with and globally. And this pile of money is going to be really either shrinking or not there. And tracking costs moving forward is going to be really, really critical. So what does that new normal like? What is it for this sector and what is it going to look like? So the reality is, working from the left, faster, you know, you're going to need to respond faster and more focused. There's going to be more collaborative response continuing to happen to adapt to change as things go up, go down, as new policies come in from the government in terms of new ways of working or continuing the way of working. There is going to be an expectation of service, whether that's internally or externally, that any from anywhere suited to the user or to the customer. So there will be people who will be expecting that working from home 3 days a week is going to be normal now. And actually, setting yourself up for that. And there will also be people who will be expecting that their house will be nice and rosy as the picture is there in terms of it, everything looking fantastic. So the expectation is going to be there. So you need to manage that expectation along with the definition of those services. But one thing is for sure, the six people around a table working in the same location together is going to be by exception. So what is the new normal from a business perspective? From a services perspective, what is offered and how they are delivered will change. We've talked about that, with increased focus on cost versus value. and how much something costs, and how much, if you don't, are not understanding your costs at the moment, really understanding your total cost of ownership. We do a lot of work around that for clients. A new continuous servicing improvement culture must exist. Some organizations have had this in pockets, but very much reflective around that service improvement model. Multi-skilling, I didn't touch too much earlier on about skills, but what we found was that the organizations who had multi-skilled, and that is whether it's in IT or in, for example, joiners who can do jobs that, you know, can do certain repairs and crossover skills, think about that moving forward, because cross-skilling is going to be key. Because there was a number of organizations we were talking to who were saying, we're really struggling because we've only got two or three people who can do this specialist skill. And actually, it's a classic transition planning, you know, and succession planning. And that maybe has not had as much attention. So things like that are really important. There's an expectation post COVID-19 and the future that in times of local crisis, you as an organization will be expected to allow people to do things for the good of others, whether that's volunteering to go into the NHS, whether it's donating, whether it's donating resources, whether it's delivering food parcels, collecting prescriptions. That needs to be factored into your business model, because there's going to be more and more needs for that as we move forward in elements of crisis. We all know there's going to be, it's a different environment, but bringing that closer to home, you know, you are going to have to factor there will be potentially more and more increased sickness within your organizations, along with lots of other issues that are challenging people in their personal lives around financial hardship, partners being unemployed or et cetera, or even unemployment of people who where you serve as their tenants. There's going to be an increase in support services, and we are anticipating, and a lot of the kind of forward thinking housing associations are already starting to man up and skill people up in specialist advice in these areas as you come out of lockdown, and whether it's antisocial behavior, noise abatement, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, and because of the things that have happened around rents and because of, you know, general recession, there's going to be loss of income and budgets are going to be focused. And as I said earlier, there's going to be a much tighter focus on costs and value with greater understanding of that total cost of ownership, not just how much you spend, but how much something costs, in terms of whether that's a virtual machine or whether it's a desktop environment, you know, how much it's costing per user per year. My final point here is, we've all talked about dashboards in the past and self-service, and some organizations have embraced this, but there are many technologies out there that help that. But the ability to understand that, present it, not just in a crisis, but around trusted data sources, and the single source of the truth is going to become more and more important. We saw the organizations who actually had those in place were on it a lot faster than the organizations who were potentially a little bit slower in, or potentially more manual-based reporting. So what does it mean from an IT perspective? And what's the new normal? There will be more flexible working, more working from home. Office only need people in the office needed by exception. And there'll be expectations of that. And that drives a different type of service in terms of what you offer to your staff. Business continuity is a new critical service. Many organizations and places I've worked for in the past, it was a document that you reviewed once a year, but actually it's probably a document that needs to be reviewed monthly. And it is a document that you need to test. And it is a document, you know, people talked about DR, but business continuity, we never envisaged on this scale. And I think everybody needs to have a look at that from a perspective of, the new normal. The services you offer, how they are delivered, how they are defined, with a tighter focus on cost and value, is going to be critical, especially within IT. IT will be challenged and challenged and challenged again, we anticipate. Also change the support hours. We saw this quite a lot in that people with flexible working and families where, you know, one partner would look after the children in the morning, somebody would look after in the afternoon, and then there'd be extended hours into the evenings. with increased remote technology support and self-service. And we think, you know, those are the types of hours, and looking at how you man up for those and cost those into your normal. Having that adaptive IT strategy, I would strongly say at the moment, I'm working with one client and we're saying we're going to write an IT strategy for 12 months, not any longer, because the reality is beyond 12 months is a big uncertainty. So probably the frequency of IT strategy updates rather than that 3-year, 5-year type plan, and your roadmap is going to be very much, well, what can I achieve in the next 12 months? One thing that was really important we saw was monitoring suppliers. So one of the things we tried to get one of our clients to do that we're working very closely with, we said, you know, you need to go out and understand what COVID is doing to them as a supplier. What does it mean? Are you getting normal hours? Are you getting the normal service? And also looking at how you exploit the technology. So there's lots of emerging technologies that are coming along, monitoring technologies that might add value, but previously have been looked at as being a techie overkill. But actually, you know, monitoring a boiler and getting some alerts out of it to not dispatch somebody to a house to be able to fix it remotely by some form of reset or et cetera, or talk somebody through over the telephone, is probably now a compelling business case that starts to stack up a little bit more. Simplification, we think, so higher expectation on IT to deliver even more value driven by business need. And you know, apologies to the IT members in the audience here, there has in the past some IT desires been in there that, you know, this is great, it's going to be great to manage stuff, so we'll do it our way. And then the final one is, you know, spend on, you know, we're talking about budgets and cost savings and all that kind of stuff, but one area that is not, you know, in our view, should not be getting reduced is security, and the ability to look at event monitoring. So you've got people coming in from all sorts of remote places, and the ability to correlate all those events, what's happening on the network at this time, using technologies like SIEM technology, security incident event monitoring, and making sure they're fully correlated. So just to have a summary, and then we can kind of go into questions and more detail and key considerations. So I've said it a few times, your services, if you've not already started to consider it, are going to have to be redefined, internal and external facing, and reviewed and reviewed on a frequent basis. If you don't understand it now, you really have to understand how much things cost. And because you're going to be challenged, and what you want to be making sure is you're making the tweaks on your costs and budgets in the right way, in the areas that are costing you a lot, whether that's networks, desktop, etc. But really looking at how they can be improved. And to be honest, if there is more of a remote working model, do you still need some of those technologies that are in place in terms of, you know, network links to multiple sites, for example? Beyond this, you know, we talk about running this as a program of change, and this should be no different. So coming out of lockdown is going to be a change program, because there will be change, and anybody who says they're going to revert back to where they were before, I think they can try, but I think genuinely there's going to be a very different place, and it's going to be tricky for them. So, and I don't think it's going to be, you know, they have to perform in that same flexible way as I indicated in the first few slides. What I would say is, you know, I'd love to see this statement happening. So no crisis equals focus equals deliver. And we will have more responses like this to manage. So I'm hoping that the organizations will learn from this. And, you know there's a few things on these slides that have provoked some thinking. One thing's for sure is things will change more frequently. It'll force strategic reviews, and back to my comment around strategies being probably a lot shorter and a lot more reflective and reviewed. It's even more important now to align IT to business need and to deliver outcomes. So I hope that's been useful. Thank you. And we'll kind of go to questions. So we've probably got about 20 minutes on questions. I'd love this to be really, kind of dynamic as well. So if you want to come off mute, more than happy. You know, sometimes it's a bit faceless and voiceless when we've got just me talking. So that's us. And if you're interested, in our websites are there, www.costratify.com. And yeah, we'd be good to follow up. If you're interested in any other comments, just drop us an email.
So I don't know if I'm using the chat. Cheers, Andy, by the way, that was really interesting. I don't know if I'm using the chat feature properly, but I can't see. So like I say, it's up to everyone. So if you want to just unmute and ask questions, go for it. If you want to type it in the chat, then go for it.
Who's first? Somebody must have a question. So
it's me. I've got more of a comment than a question. What resonated with me was the fact that my term is just cutting through red tape. You still have structure, but it is interesting how we have done in 3 weeks what we were thinking of doing for over a year.
Yeah.
And that reaction, that there are obviously most people really pulled together. There were one or two people who don't, but that's always the case. But it is, you do think that, yeah, there's a better way of working. We found the better way of working. Sure, keep that structure, but there's no reason why we can't actually react a lot quicker than we have been in the past.
Did you see some of the behaviours things that I talked about with people? Did you see some of that coming through?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. And there are, you saw two types of approach. You saw the approach that was embedded in the past, where people are still, it's the way we used to do it. I found a number of people coming out with that, but very quickly they realized the imperative was to actually, what I was doing was getting people on virtual contact centers, setting those up, and life has changed completely now. And those people who said this is the way we've always done it have realized that just because you've always been doing that way cannot necessarily mean it's the right way to do things.
It's interesting you say that about contact centers. I've been talking to an organization where we've been doing some analysis, and they spend a lot of money on telephony, and I've said, so what's been happening with your landlines then while you've been out of the office? They said, well, we've not been using them. I said, so do you think you need them when you go back? And that's a really interesting debate. Well, probably we don't. But if we'd have had the conversation pre-COVID around take away the landline, that it's this landline protectionism world where I've got to have a telephone number. It's got to be on my desk. If the phone's not ringing, you know. So there's some real, it's stimulating some thinking, I would say. Printing's another one, which is another good example.
Andy, there's a comment. I was going to say there's a comment that's come through from Josie around this, the sustainability of working from home. So I think, I know I've had some issues with it. My laptop broke into the lockdown, and I've had to fork out for a new one, and I've got a desk and a desk chair, but it's nowhere near as sort of comfortable as it would be in the office. Have you had any conversations around the sustainability of remote working and what it's going to look like in the future?
I think remote working, I always term it remote working. I don't call it home working. I think home working, there are very few organizations who have 100% home workers. Because I think there is, even though you kind of like set up the virtual coffee mornings and all those kind of things, that, you know, Andy and I had a really good experience of this. We do a lot of our work where we present and we create the outputs on very large posters. And then the best way to get people interacting with that is you stand in front of them with a marker pen and you walk all over them with scroll and things like that. We try to do those over Teams. Now, technology doesn't help for a start. So that's one thing. And the technology process you describe, you know, Ben, there, they have to be adapted so that you've got a telephone number you can ring and somebody can turn up and drop those off, etc. But I strongly believe that it'll be flexible working. And for any organization that says we're not going to have people in the office, I think that could be quite dangerous. There's a lot of people I've spoken to who are just yearning to get back into an environment where there is other people talking and other people working. So I agree. I don't know whether that's fully answered your question, but I think the reality is, you know, it will be more flexible working. I think people will still go into the office, but they'll probably choose when to go into the office. It will help from a financial, from a travel. People have been more productive because they've not been sat. You know, one person I know, they said, I've taken 3 hours off my, you know, every day I used to spend 3 hours in the car driving into Manchester there and back. So there's a lot of positives, but there are some negatives, and I think it's back to they're going to still have to look out for people.
Yeah, and I've seen another comment through from Josie around, I know I've spoke to a lot of people who are in a similar boat as some of your employees, Josie, by the sound of it. People have their kids working from home, and I know people who have young children, it's sort of, you're on a rota with your partner, if you're lucky enough to have a partner to, sort of look after the kids, and it's really difficult to get work done. And I think, just taking on from what you said, it sounds like the solutions around, it's just that degree of flexibility, isn't it? If someone feels like they can be more productive working at home, then they have the option to do so, but it's the appreciation that some people like coming to an office.
I think what we may see more of is drop-in locations, you know, like localized workspaces. So companies exploiting more of like your work hub type things. So you don't have to drive into a city center, but actually there's a shared working environment that allows you to get out of the office, allows you to have a space where you can work, but not necessarily forcing you to drive to the office every day. So I think there will be an element of organizations looking at that as to how they can work with, you know, your Reguses, your work hubs, those type of people, to allow people to be more productive. Because people have been working over the internet, they have been working securely. So as long as they can work remotely, they don't necessarily have to all be in the same place. But I think there will be a case where we will need it's not going to be you're not going to get away, and I don't think it will be healthy to have people always away from the office.
Yeah, Andy.
Yeah,
Danny here from Viva.
Oh, hi, Danny.
Hi there. I just wondered whether or not you found, in your experiences, that people were working longer hours, certainly more unsociable hours, and whether you see that as, if you saw that, do you see that as being the new norm and the potential to be detrimental to organisations?
I think that's a really good point. The discipline of working at home and having a space where you can close the door, and I've heard some great stories about this from one guy, and I'll keep it anonymous but share it, where his children didn't quite get the fact that when he was working and when he was not working. So he would pick his computer up and he would walk out of the front door and say bye to his kids and come in through the back door and basically then come back into his office and say, now I'm at work. And then he would then walk out of the back door and bathroom. So he then had the experience of his kids welcoming him home. And, you know, they obviously would see him through the day, but it was a clear division between work and home. And I thought at the time, well, that seems a bit extreme, but then I started thinking about the psychological element of it. So he shut down and locked his computer and literally left the office and treated his office in that way. And I think there will have to be a lot more. I don't think there's probably been enough attention to that so far. And that's probably one area we're going to have to look out for people, because it's very easy to kind of just then roll into, oh, I'll just go and have another look at my mail at 9 in the evening. But we have that on phones, but, you know, I think it's a very good point. Well made, Danny.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think there's other comments as well, just in the chat around. I know Karen, I don't know if you want to come off mute, but I was trying to figure out what you were trying to say. I know it's there's obviously, I think the point is there's definitely been a lot of technical challenges, but if we're looking at moving forward and having truly flexible working where people are free to sort of have whatever working arrangements they work, it must be challenging to implement that into an IT strategy that means they're not just forking out an absolute ton of money for 10% of the workforce, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think you need to, you know, we've done, and I go back to Andy and I worked on a piece of work for pre-COVID for a charity. And it was interesting. I spoke to this charity in the middle of COVID and they said, oh, this is, you know, what we prepared for 9 months ago when we moved offices was just brilliant. And they were very flexible, and we did work styles. So we looked at work styles, and we looked at certain people, you know, and essentially there are only three types of people. People who are always in the office, people who are in and out of the office, and people who are always out of the office. And those three types of people, whatever categories you have, whatever labels you put on them, you have to adapt the technology. And so, for example, when I was doing a recent discovery session with a housing association, I was talking to a cleaner, and I said to her, what's your IT? What's the main IT? She says, my phone. She said, and my phone actually isn't really fit for purpose, but she said, all my instructions, everything I get is on my phone. So, well, do you need anything else? She said, no, I don't need anything else. I can get my pay slips. I can get all my actions. I can send emails. It rings. I've got text. I've got telephone. I've got all the apps that I need on my phone. I don't need anything else. And I think that's where you have to be smart in your IT strategy. There isn't a single size fits all. And actually most organizations can't afford to have a single size fits all. So this is really a really important part of back to my point right at the very end of aligning IT to business outcomes and what people need. And we've all seen people who've got, you know, the laptop, they've got a desktop, they've got an iPad, they've got another tablet, and they've got a phone. You know, their arms, their kind of shoulders so far down because they're carrying so much kit around. And I think that's where you really need to look at those core offers within your strategy, because otherwise it just will not be affordable. So I don't know whether that answers your question.
Yeah, I think so.
That's kind of it. I think it's trying to be everything to all people. I think we've kind of forced that cultural change, and that's been really beneficial because everyone can see that we could do it. You know, we've actually shown that we can all work remotely for 1,300 people. That's a huge success. But it's those, you know, now trying to deal with the people who want to come in because they want to come in, not because they need to come in, and then making sure that the people that are more remote have, and it's not just the tech, it's like you've always said, it's the right desk, the chair and everything else, and making sure that people can be as productive as they need to be wherever they happen to be. And it's just trying to make that balance between providing everything for everybody in every location and providing the right thing in the most appropriate location.
One thing we did say, and it was in a housing association where we said, because a lot of requests in the early days of COVID response was for printers. And we said, absolutely no way. There's no way we're providing printers to people. Firstly, you know, digital first. And secondly, you know, what is the reason you're needing to print? And there is GDPR and security issues and all those kind of things. And I think printing is going to be a really interesting place moving forward. I think there'll be a lot of organizations who'll reflect on the two calls for me, a telephony. So do I need all this complex telephony back to the contact center comment? Do I need all of this? Could I just do it on Teams, or could I simplify it? Yes, I might need a more complex telephony for my contact center and printing. Why am I paying hundreds of thousands of pounds for a fleet of printers to be sat there that probably are declining? Why don't I just buy that kind of printing service when I need it and have that available as a subscription type model? I think there's going to be a lot of change around that. Any other questions? Anything coming through, Ben?
Not anything through. I mean, it'd be interesting to know, because I know obviously you guys have had a pretty unique view of the market, and you've been in contact with a lot of people who have been going through this crisis. It'd be interesting if anyone else on the calls had some really good success stories that they could share. Could be valuable for other people on the call.
No, I think, Ben, sorry, it's Danny again. Just like every IT department, I think these past few months have changed, sort of tipped things upside down and really challenged the art of the possible. For me, I think it's an opportunity to try and reduce costs and possibly, dare I say, actually give the staff, the customers, what they actually need. And just, I was chuckling to myself at the comment Andy made about the staff member who has the laptop, the desktop, the iPad, the numerous phones, and actually, you know, I've been reflecting on this, and I'm thinking, is it actually even needed anymore? You know, I have a Surface Pro, and actually, I barely even use it in that sort of multi-tablet mode. I just don't need it anymore. And I just wonder, you know, in terms of our other staff, will they need all this multiple devices? And, you know, it's I think we're going to be challenging the technology stacks quite a lot in the short term. You know, and to everyone who's managed to roll out Teams successfully in the space of a few days, I'd love to have a chat with you, because the security and governance piece is absolutely weighing heavily on my mind, along with the whole PCI DSS compliance of taking payments from home and all that stuff. So it's going to be an interesting time ahead, and I think we've just scratched the surface, really.
I think it's a very good comment, Danny. And it goes back to one of the comments I made earlier about, yes, we've rolled things out fast, but there have been shortcuts that have been made. And if you've made decisions around potential security and things like that, it is the time to start considering how you revisit them. I could probably guarantee that most organizations have not given their policies in terms of file sharing, channel sharing, all the documents that get put in those channels, you know, running analysis on those to check there's no personal details been put into any of those channels. You know, it's all those kind of checks that I would encourage organizations to really be thinking about as to how they can do that, and maybe even get specialists just to kind of do a once over of those. And so interestingly, like, you know, we've personally in the past done a lot of things around pen testing from outside, but actually a lot of the kind of next phase of security analysis probably needs to be more focused internally. So, you know, when GDPR was happening, there was a lot of that happened, but the reality is, unintentionally, you may have broken some of those things in the last few months. So it's just really important to have that on your radar as well.
I think just one other thing I was going to mention, Andy, as well, on the back of that, I suppose, is in terms of device strategies, is actually the application strategy as well, and actually how you're consuming the data from those applications through those devices. And it's about having that kind of longer term application strategy in access to those applications, I guess, from those devices. So, you know, we've seen in the past, haven't we, Andy, I think, in other housing associations where people have rolled out iPads, but actually the application isn't ready for that format. So actually it just becomes a coaster. It becomes something to take notes on or use as a productivity item. So
a really good example of that is the organizations that were very, very BDI focused. And so a lot of those people had VDI for certain types of applications like your housing management, your finance system, because of their legacy, because we all know in the market, certain applications out there are a bit fat still in terms of the way they run. They're not browser driven. They're not modern authentication, all those kind of things. So, but what we then saw was, you know, Teams comes along, you try to collaborate. Well, hang on a minute. I'm working in this world outside of my VDI. So VDI wasn't necessarily set up properly to do proper video and audio. And, you know, and there was a lot. So they ended up running that outside of the VDI world, and then started asking questions. Well, why do I need to be in this VDI world? So there's a lot of people now asking that and looking at that kind of channel of technology and deciding, well, actually, how do I move forward in my desktop strategy? So that's a really good example around apps as well, or when modern apps arrive. Any other questions? Just conscious of time, heading up to one. Happy to stay on, but I know you've probably all got lunch to go and get and things like that. So, but any final questions coming through? Anybody wants to reflect on Ben's question?
Just a flag, I know some people might not notice you're all automatically muted.
Hi, it's Marek from LNQ. I just wanted to share one thing with you. So what actually saved us before the lockdown? So we actually decided to run a remote working capacity exercise with business. Okay. We planned it for, I think, 2-3 weeks, and we managed to schedule it for the week before the lockdown. And actually, it was a valuable lesson about our capacity around VPN and internet connectivity. And we did the exercise on Thursday before the lockdown. We fixed all the underlying capacity issues by Tuesday the following week, just before Wednesday when the lockdown hit. And we had 2,500 people connecting from home. And actually, it was a huge success from our perspective because the service desk calls dropped by, I think, 50 or 60%. And people actually, compared to Thursday the week before and on Wednesday the week after, they saw enormous improvements. And they actually we got loads of praise from this as well. And also with our users, we rolled out in the last 2 years, we've been rolling out Microsoft devices to users. So we were walking away from VDI and Citrix and giving people devices. And we, it made a huge difference because people could see, you know, in your household, or my husband, my wife, they cannot log in and we could work. So I think testing, as you, I think Andy, you mentioned before, Ben, that, you know, DR, you need to do it all the time. And that's what actually saved us because we did that test. It was one day was enough to get all the lessons and actually fix all the underlying capacity issues we had. And we were pretty well prepared for the following week. So
that's great news. I've heard other clients who did the same. And they, you know, they did exactly the same and they're the ones who've come out of it really well. It's good. It's well done. It's brilliant. Yeah.
So highly recommend testing for you guys.
Okay.
Now we're passing on. So is anyone else?
I've got something that's more of a comment than anything else and just something to think about. Within our organization, we've got an outsourced IT department and you've got your contact details for that outsourced department on your desktop. But we do have people in-house within IT and you're still getting lots of people constantly calling the in-house IT team versus following the channels that we've been given. And I know that's an age-old thing that happens within a lot of organizations. Some organizations have got better at it than others. But I think we've found definitely, and certainly I've found, because when I'm trying to contact my mobile phone provider, I'm having to use a chatbot, and there's so much less capacity for businesses that I'm dealing with on a personal level to actually be able to pick up the phone and speak to somebody. Yeah. I think I've certainly found, I think other people have found, they're almost naturally gravitating towards that internally as well, and it's almost teaching you outside of work around that element. I don't know if anyone else has seen anything.
That's a really good observation. That. I've not really thought about it in that way, but I've it's a fair comment.
So what we've done, we noticed the similar thing during the testing. So what we did, we created Teams chats and Teams for our departments that from technology perspective we interact with, and we started from people who logged most of the issues, and we're using it in Teams. So obviously, they used to log the ticket, but people don't want to log the ticket. So we ended up having loads of stuff on Yammer, which is not a good press for technology department. But when we channeled them to Teams and added, you know, each channel for different department outside technology, actually it improved our reaction is first thing. But also, we noticed some problems much easier because one person said, oh, actually, direct access is not working for this. And then you will have 50 likes on this and you know that it's a proper problem and you jump on it straight away. And it's actually sped up massively our resolution time on some of the stuff. And noticing that it's a problem, it's not a single person who's experiencing it.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting.
Good way to prioritize issues, whichever one gets
indeed
the most.
Yeah,
it's like gamification of an issue. So we'll all vote for it.
A poll. We've got one issue today to start a poll.
That's been really good. Any other final questions? Just conscious of your time. I really, really thank you for it's been really good that people have engaged at the end here. And I hope it's been useful and more than happy if anybody wants to talk further about anything.
Anything else? I feel like I should have.
Okay.
Just...
Good. Let's call it a day if there's no more. So don't forget to stop the recording, Ben.
Cool. Cheers, guys. So everything's recorded. So I'll send everyone a link through.
Yeah.